All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Thank you. Welcome to John Bowd's All the Rage. We're just having a giggle because we got a comment on, because we pre-advertised the show on Facebook, Twitter, the whole shaboodle. And obviously we mentioned, and we will be discussing, the behaviour or not behaviour of the BBC and Diane Abbott. I've got some interesting stats though, and someone obviously was on the train with her, because they're mates. So you're sitting next to her, escorting her, obviously. And apparently we've got to question her attitude on the train. I don't know. I haven't seen any reports about her attitude on the train. I have seen a video of her getting attacked on the train. I have seen that video where she was approached and someone actually went to hit her. But, hey, what do I know? I wasn't with her on the train, I just saw the video. If you read that report, whoever put that post up, if you read that in the Express, the Daily Mail, the Sun, the Daily Telegraph, come back at me again with four alternatives to those papers. Just four alternatives to the publications, and then we'll have the debate. John, I do apologise, take it away.
No, thank you, Dave. That's a very appropriate introduction. There's a funny serendipity to tonight's show, to how these things begin. So, you know, just in case listeners are interested, basically they normally begin as the germ of an idea that comes to me when I roll out of bed in the afternoon or have just been, you know, randomly shouting at passers-by in the street. And this is where these things come from. No, they come from me observing the news. And there's been a few things which we would address, actually, that have come up in the last couple of days. One of my favourites being that with the whole when someone's truly appalling behaviour, such as racism or homophobia or anything else, is concerned, there's always but you didn't see the thing that happened before. The great mystical, unseen, unknown thing that happened before this incident, which made this person turn into a racist, you know. It's a bit like the day that Mr. Farage was on LBC and was talking about how he didn't like living next door to Romanians, but that wasn't xenophobia. Apparently, it was just tiredness. So, anyway, we're going to talk this evening about a modern story about attack and debate. So the main purpose of this show is to detail where we are and to make sure certain scum know their place. So we're going to be harking back to our first show, which some of you hardcore All the Rage heads will remember. It was 39, as of this evening, 39 shows ago, where we discussed the state of modern debate. We're going to look at the escalation that has recently caught the headlines, and we're going to look at particularly some stuff that happened here in Britain, but also maybe some examples a bit more internationally. And it seems to have become quite dangerous to possess a left-wing opinion in this country all of a sudden. Even one that just basically isn't very hard right. But we'll go over that. So a quick recap from the first show. What we discussed there was the overwhelming amount of chancers who run emotion-based arguments through learned tricks to make it look like they can win. Being good at arguing a point is not really about facts, but it's a skill for the overconfident. Usually put in their position of overconfidence by their class position, who are in this position mainly because we live in a culture where it no longer matters if you are totally wrong, so long as you can tap into manufactured grievances and play on typical hate figures like Muslims, LGBT people, foreigners, or indeed Diane Abbott. Now, the first thing I want to say this evening, at least according to my notes, I wouldn't have argued this was the first thing to come on to, but sod it, we're here. Moral equivalence. So I won't repeat too much of what we said in the first show because you can still find it online, and that would be a bit of a cheat. But the kind of way that debates are conducted, to kind of sum up the way I feel about it, the way debates are conducted now is it's very much a circus. As Dave has mentioned, we will talk about BBC Question Time later on. And I'll go into a bit more detail then, but to be honest, I'm not a fan. I never have been, because I think it's a circus that's populated by millionaires, mostly. But you know, it's that kind of thing where people think that this is how debates are done. This is what it's about. It's about my person being nasty to your person, and therefore winning with an adopted concept of logic or anything else to kind of hide their particular hatreds or the establishment cause that they are in fact really working for or arguing for, with a conveniently selected audience to cheer them on like the hogs that they are. So, moral equivalence. This is something I want to talk about quickly because it's one of those said tricks. There's an academic definition of this, but it goes along with sort of moral relativism to some degree. But I think what we're really more concerned with here is with the practical usage, the way you and I will interact with such a concept every day. So it's about comparing a stance on something. And like all such tools in the modern context, it is used to try and gain the upper hand, and does this mostly by assumption. That is, my position is right. If criticized, I will look for a usually assumed way in which my opponent is wrong, i.e. all left-wing politics is the Soviet Union or shutting down free speech, etc., etc., and exploit this while justifying any extremism on my side, such as the activities that the US took part in countries like Chile, Nicaragua, etc. at that time. Now, I'm using this in this context because it's worth talking about the idea of the Cold War, if any of you kids out there a bit young to remember that, but, you know, ask your dad, your mum, or look in a history book. And this was when there was two great big opposing powers, and there was a bit of an attitude that whatever one did was justified by it being against the other. And people made, basically drew ideas out of a hat for how close they were in their style, which is completely factually inaccurate and historically illiterate. However, it's usually used today by said historically illiterate people to complain about, say, Jeremy Corbyn, leader of the Labour Party, talking to the IRA before it was fashionable, while forgetting at the same time the amount of violence that the loyalist side conducted, or siding with Britain in any war, none of which have been justifiable in my lifetime and longer. The big one, which I can never really be bothered to argue, but I'll state it right now anyway, is there is no moral equivalence between fascism and communism. How these ideologies have been used is irrelevant, because while the failures of communism in the past can be debated and should be, fascism has none of these failures because violence and domination are fundamental to its ideology and actions. You may not think that communism can work, but at heart it is an ideology of peace and equality. Fascism is an ideology of force, dominance and violence. It is also a death cult. It openly says certain people are worth less than others and has even advocated wiping them out. Mass murder with the apparatus to prove it, as you will see from the 1933 to 45 era. Plus, you would need to engage with some of the realities here. For instance, the communism of 1917 made divorce and homosexuality legal in parts of the world where it hadn't been before. It gave people a greater level of freedom. What it then turned into is something else. And it's funny, I'm actually breaking one of my own rules here, Dave, because I've always said I can't. No one wants to listen to those sad bastards who spend all their time arguing about what happened in 1917. So we'll move on. But I thought those two bits were point of reference. I don't want to be that bloke at the back of the pub talking about how the communist dream was failed. But there you go. You can look up a history book, folks. There is no way any honest argument could compare these two ideologies. If you want some extreme examples of what I was talking about earlier on in regards to the US's actions in Latin America, for instance, you can check out Gene Kirkpatrick, or is it Genie? I don't remember how you pronounce it. And also either Niall Ferguson, whichever pronunciation that twit is using this week. They're pretty good at justifying the actions of the US and Henry Kissinger and having the whole kind of, well, what other option did they have argument. Worth bearing in mind when you see how many bodies hit the floor. While I do not endorse violence against civilians or any kind of randomness of this particular kind of action, there is an argument that violence is acceptable when fighting an occupying force, such as Israel or Turkey, if you're in Rojava, or fighting against ISIS as well. I choose not to engage with this argument because it lacks a basis in reality and it's counterproductive. So, you know, other examples of slightly less contentious but still important examples of doing some kind of moral equivalence. And this will become relevant to what we're going to talk about next. So, actually, do you know what, Dave? I've just made a decision. The example I've got here, I'm going to use after the next section that I'm going to talk about. So if you want to come in, do a music break or just feedback on a bit of that, please do now. and I will talk about that example later on.
John Bouts, John the Rage, all the on Tracks FM, Tracks FM, Tracks FM.
Of was it 1977 or 75? I can't remember. 10cc and Dreadlock Holiday. John Bowd's All the Rage here live on www.tracksfm.org. John, take it away.
Hello, mate. Yeah, thanks for that. I was just—I was actually just doing a little bit of admin while that song was on, because I was just setting up two new interviews for the show in the future. Yeah. Okay. So one of the things that's jokes aside from what I was saying earlier, one of the things that actually did spark my interest in coming back to this subject of debate and attack, is what I call it, basically where we're at now, is an incident or incidents that happened a couple of weeks ago that took place outside of Parliament. Now, for those listeners who are outside of Britain, or at least from the north, a quick description. Outside of the Houses of Parliament, there is a large grass verge, and on one part of it, it is common for news agencies to interview people about issues going on in the Houses of Parliament on that day, or similar political stuff. It's like a little standpoint. By the way, if anyone's listening from the north, I'm sure you did actually get that joke when I just talked about people who don't come from London. It was actually a joke. But anyway, don't call the show and harangue Dave, okay, in some weird dialect that none of us can understand. On the 7th of January, two people in particular, not the only two, but these ones are caught on camera, were harassed by a gaggle of far-right blokes wearing yellow vests and claiming that their harassment of these figures was because they were betraying Brexit and they were exercising free speech this way. These types of harassment have been going on for much longer. In the case of Anna Soubry, who is one of the people harassed and made the most headlines, in her case, it's because she's a critic of Brexit and many of the leading figures in the campaign. And in the case of Mr. Owen Jones, the journalist, because he is a left-wing journalist and supporter of many progressive causes. In neither case did the harassment begin on the day of this incident, nor did it begin in the physical realm, but first via social media and through the press. Most of it involved cheap insults being shouted in the name of free speech, including homophobia that translates directly into the streets. As Jones noted, many of the things that were said to him, traitor or terrorist sympathiser, are taken directly from newspaper headlines using the very same terms, mostly from the Daily Mail. And these are designed to whip hatred and intolerance up by never coming back to actually bite the perpetrators. Jones was held to account on his political positions by these very brave free speech warriors who called him a rent boy, which I think we can all agree sums up his political position on Brexit very well. Anna Soubry was the one taken more seriously, sadly, as a Tory and sitting MP. Owen was barely covered in the press, and the next day, and then subsequently a week or so later at another event, he was targeted again, this time actually being spat at by some of the people. The same people, you know, calling him a rent boy and a traitor and a terrorist and a scumbag. And the main perpetrator of all of this malarkey is somebody named James Goddard, who for a change I think is actually his real name for once. And he is a rival to our friend Little Tommy in the far-right stakes and has been known to call for war with the people of this country that he considers traitors to Britain, and also threatening policemen, among other things. He also talks of a Cromwell-like need to clear out all the present political lot. Again, this boy is not smart on his history, and neither are any of his dribbling, flag-waving followers. One reason why this has raised concerns, by the way, for those of you thinking, well, it's just, you know, it's a little bit of banter, maybe, that kind of thing. Yes. Yes. There's always something about the way, you know, someone gets in the face of a woman in the streets of Britain and screams, you know, you should be raped, you fetid fucking whore, that I think, yeah, there's nothing like a good bit of banter, nothing like a good bit of, you know, mutual respect kind of stuff. Nothing to worry about there. Anyway, one reason why it has raised concern, for those of you not in the know, is that in 2016, a few days before the EU referendum, a Labour MP named Joan Cox was brutally murdered in her constituency by a white supremacist who had links to the far-right group Britain First. There followed this an amazing amount of horrific responses, including a UKIP claim that the murder took the momentum out of the Leave campaign. That was from Mr. Farage. Even as far as to the claim that it would be used by the Remain side for emotional blackmail. Also worth remembering, just to remind you, the Leave campaign won. The Berry branch of UKIP even claimed that the event would be used by Leavers for their campaign. It wasn't. Actually, campaigning was suspended for about 2 or 3 days. And in the subsequent by-election, which obviously had to be held there because the MP was no longer able to sit, most of the main parties, including the Conservatives, to their credit, did not actually stand any candidates. All of the far-right parties, or what makes up the English Democrats, whatever else, they stood people in those things against the Labour candidate. They lost. Many far-right sites and spokespeople, however, have delighted in the murder of Joe Cox, because she was, in their terms, a traitor to Britain. And I'm rather glad they did. They have actually done this, because it reminds us of who they really are and who they always are. To this day, some claim Cox's murder was even a false flag, as if it somehow didn't happen. I don't know if you've, what, is she, she's in an underground bunker somewhere or something? I just don't really understand that thing. Maybe she killed herself and you know, blamed the far right. Now, that is a situation, that incident is well worth remembering when we discuss the things that happened outside of Parliament. It's not just people being oversensitive about these things. Yeah, I mean, there is... look, no one deserves to be harassed and harangued like this. Anna Soubry is not someone I have any time for. She is a conservative, a far more nasty one than our press and certain sort of anti-Brexiteers will give you the honest truth about. All of that shit of austerity, bedroom taxes, you know, punishing people for the crime of being poor. She's on with all that. She's done that. She's voted for it. She's in favour of it. She's a nasty piece of work. But, you know, running up and screaming in her face. Well, also, I don't see what you think you're actually going to achieve by this. That's the thing that fascinates me the most. You know, as a long-term protester and somebody who has a very serious bill owed to him from George Soros, I really don't get when people think, you know, this. Trust me, I can tell you some tricks that work and tricks that don't work. And just kind of randomly yelling a load of shit in someone's face is not really going to get you very far. But hey, you know, it's your free time, and I've no doubt you've got plenty of it. Also worth remembering, by the way, so with all of that and like this situation, there was a statement made by Sir Gerald Howarth, who's a Tory MP for Aldershot, that in the case of Brexit, should it be considered to be betrayed in some way? You're hearing a lot about that if you're paying attention to the British press at the moment. Then the streets could turn violent. You know, some of these far-right people could get really agitated and start taking to the streets and turn violent. I know, so presumably, you know, finding anyone who looks foreign and beating them up or what, I don't know. And apparently a second referendum could also lead to this kind of unrest, according to the police. At least somebody who spoke to Sky News said this, and even Archbishop John Centenu. So in other words, the rabid dogs could be unleashed if we don't do what the far right want. You would think that the police might actually do something about this. For instance, like when they detain anti-royalists a day before a royal wedding on the off chance that some of them might want to protest. But no, when it comes to far-right thugs, we all just have to live with it, so long as they are not costing football teams any money anymore. So on just the general streets, it's all right. So another thing to remember in this particular climate of hate campaigns, physical attacks, and a total degraded social structure. Recently, there was a murder in Poland of the Gdansk city mayor, Paul Adamowicz. Pardon me, people. I don't mean to get that wrong. If you're listening in Poland, I'm going to go with Adamowicz. Anyway, he was murdered on the 13th of January, and he was attacked by a man who blamed his party for putting him in prison. Although it is said that his murder had no direct links to any political party or movement, which in this case may be true, but the wider context is what we're looking at here. Because you cannot divorce an incident like this from the increasingly extreme political climate in Poland right now. Adamowicz was, in fact, a centrist, but was also one who was happy to support LGBT rights and refugees. And this is in a Poland which is fast becoming a Catholic theocracy and full of the same tabloid shite that we have in this country about Muslims taking over and culture being damaged, etc. And much of this, of course, has fed into the far-right ideology they have there, which is similar to it is in this country, except maybe even more overtly mainstream. 2017, a right-wing group called All Polish Youth actually issued a, quote, political death certificate against Mr. Adamowicz, and another MP accused him of, quote, serving German interests, which is a bit dog whistle, I'm sure you'll agree. Now, I'm going to read a direct quote so you can get this a little bit better. This is from Anna Oppenheim in Novara Media. Quote, the normalisation of hate speech in the national media and the Law and Justice Party, which for those of you who don't know is the party that are presently in power, attempts to delegitimise the opposition. And this has been blamed for enabling a fertile climate of political violence. All of this is while a government that have not become actively involved in events. So I've now become actively involved in events hosted by the far right. Bear with me, I've got a little bit more detail on that, and we seem to have time this week, so I will read it out. So also from the same article, again, this is directly quoted. And in November, to honour 100 years of Polish independence, President Andrzej Duda sponsored a march organised by a fascist group, the same one that in previous years raised slogans of White Poland, White Europe, and chants including, "And on trees instead of leaves will hang communists." Government officials took part in a 200,000-strong demonstration whose participants include the Italian neo-fascist group Forza Nuova, along with undoubtedly thousands of ordinary citizens who wished to join the official celebration of a national holiday. The normalisation of the radical right is helped by a martyrological vision of Polish history, present in the collective imagination and keenly used in political discourse. It is through historical reenactment that far-right ideas and symbols often make it into the mainstream. Fascist marches are disguised as merely patriotic ones commemorating important events, slogans inciting the political killings as references to the past. It is easier to dehumanize political opponents when images of the great wars are evoked. Patriotic fashion brand Red is Bad gained iconic status among Polish nationalists with a t-shirt slogan that featured the historical slogans such as "Death to the traitors of the fatherland." Among fans of this brand is President Duda. So I think that quote was worth reading out from the article because it gives you an idea of how far it's gone there, and if it can go far there, it can go far here. Now, so that was Poland. Where are we now? So coming back to my thing about moral equivalence. So I think this is a good point to talk about what I was going to talk about earlier on. So yes, moral equivalence. Some people brought up certain things after these incidents in the streets, you know, of verbal, and I think you can call it physical. I think if someone spits at you like they did to Owen Jones, that's a physical attack. If you spit at a policeman, you'll get done for it. So if you can spit at them, you can get done for doing it to anyone. John McDonald apparently had said that Tory politicians who enacted policies that have destroyed and ended people's lives should always be challenged in the street for doing it. Now, this is a non-violent call for responsibility to those who have committed crimes. It's not the same as people, as I've said before, because we use this language, it's very important, showing up and shouting, "traitor," which is one of the words that was said to Jo Cox as she was murdered, showing up and calling somebody a terrorist sympathizer. I mean, if you actually watch these videos, there is the stuff that people are saying, especially to Owen Jones, is not, they're not holding him to account or anything, not challenging his viewpoint, they're just calling him names. And calling him scum and telling him he doesn't deserve life. So this is fuck all to do with the free expression of your opinions. You're just harassing someone. And that is not the same as what John McDonald said. He's not calling for yelling a bunch of crap at people solely to intimidate them and to intimidate others. By the way, Dave, I haven't caught up on this. You might have. Apparently there's a story going around that there was a library that was surrounded by Mr. Lennon and some of his friends. I don't want to go into too much quote for it because I haven't read the story yet, but I just caught it on social media before I came on. Have you heard about it?
I haven't. I do know today Britain First, her YouTube channel has been taken down, and Google have also taken something down by Mr. Lennon and Britain First on their policy of hate. Okay. And one of the channels was a donation. Obviously, people donate to these channels. On that basis, they were able to take it down straight away. Looking at their social media policies, and I know people, want them. If I don't agree with something, I want it taken down. I understand that, people's emotions, but their policies don't apply as much if it's free and you don't make money. Their policies are very stringent on if you're making money, even as a charity, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they, social media things, let's be honest, it's all about money, they don't really care. And them taking down those pages, yeah, that's fair enough, but there really is a bit of a bolted horse situation. I mean, Britain First are a group that, you and I gave a fond, loving goodbye to around about 25 shows ago, so it's not really, now you've taken their page down, yeah.
I'm not sure about the library thing. I'm going to ask you something, John, and you're, yes. You are an expert on it. Jada or Jada? Jaden?
Oh, yeah, Jada. Jada. French. Do you know what? She's so fucking irrelevant. I've forgotten her surname. Prenzin, that's it.
She well, her website went up. She's left Britain first. She never gave reasons why.
She's left Paul Golding. That was
yeah, that's sad, it. And she said, watch this space or anything. I just wondered what you're in. Your intelligence, and this is not a hunt campaign at all. The Trax is not into that at all. But I just, you know, I mean, if there was a hate campaign against white people, I don't like it either. But can you give us information on that, John? If you know anything, you may not. I don't know.
To be honest, mate, this is the first I've heard of it. And if Jade is telling me to watch a space, I'm probably got better things to do in my spare time. But yeah, no, I can look into that. I don't normally. I don't know why I mentioned the library thing tonight, because I don't normally jump into something I haven't got the details on. But it just occurred to me. No, I don't know anything about that, but I mean, obviously, we will keep tabs on it. I know, I can tell you some people who probably will know about it, though. I suspect Hope Not Hate will have some good information on it. Certainly Matthew Collins, especially, who's a researcher with them. He does a lot of good journalism on the far right. I mean, pretty much anything I'm talking to you about now, even without looking at the page yet, I'm sure they've done already. So
yeah, just before, we're going to go to a music break. Why I'm interested in Jada is I saw a documentary on a BBC documentary. I think the BBC should stick to fiction and documentaries, personally. But and it was interesting because she spoke about her early life and stuff, and she said something happened to her when she was younger, but she refused. And they did try. The production company journalists did try to get her to speak about it, and she refused to. But she said it's got something to do with her views on immigration and stuff like that. And I always think that when people have that thing where they express themselves and vent their frust, whatever happened to them, and it's probably unfortunate, no doubt it's unfortunate, and it manifests itself into something, you know. It's just my opinion. I'm no psychologist. We're going to come back with John after this.
John Bouts, all the rage, all the on Trax FM.
Legend of the four-tailed scorpions. Scorpions. Scorpions.
Yeah.
De facto and Legend of the Four-Tailed Scorpion. John Baird's All the Rage. We're just discussing loads of stuff online and offline. It's quite amazing, actually, because John gets it when I... Because I'm a little bit of an armchair psychologist, and when I negotiate, it's a trade union, so I look at body language, and I just noticed on that interview that when they tried to pin her down on something that happened when she was younger, her body language totally changed. Jada's normally speeched up, you know, scripted, got the answers for everything, but she didn't have an answer for when she was pinned down on this. She'd heard her demeanour just totally change. And I, as she's younger than me, and most people are younger than me, I just feel that it's unfortunate, because I'm saying to John, you can be brainwashed by politics, but you have different doors that you can get out on, you know, and different levels, and you might change your opinion on a lot of stuff, because there's lots of doors. With hate campaigns or hate groups, there's no door. You're right or you're wrong, and it's normally the debate is based around violence. It's terrible anyway. John, take it away.
Yeah, thanks, mate. That is sadly the case. It's not, they don't deal in doors, they have brick walls. Now, just to close off the last section and to bring to the point of why I was talking about moral equivalence this evening, because I've cut this up a little bit this evening. There are no left-wing plots to attack or kill political opponents. There's plenty of right-wing ones, probably more than you might realise just from watching the mainstream media, but there's no left-wing ones. No one has murdered a Conservative Leave voting MP. With all this in mind, I'm not suggesting that any calls for violence towards MPs or others that I do not like should take place, as I think we've covered tonight, but I do reject the idea that it is the same, based entirely on the evidence presented. Right-wingers love violence and have it as central to their beliefs, whether it's far-right or even moderate centrist. Left-wingers only use it when they're under threat. So Antifa are not violent, folks. We're just defending ourselves, all right? So they're not the same thing, and as many things in the real world often aren't the same. Okay, so debate. Let's talk about debate. More specifically, we've done this before, so let's talk about what is debatable and what isn't. Contrary to popular opinion, there is such a thing as the undebatable. Through a combination of ludicrousness and arrogance, we find this being something far more common in today's world. There's an interesting thing I see a lot of today as a technique from previous eras to try and dodge debate, which was always about falling on a personal belief system, particularly a religious one. On any program or writing or whatever, a person trying to defend homophobia or racism, for instance, would use their religious beliefs to say something like homosexuality is wrong, usually quoting it says in the Bible, dot, 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 something like that. And even comparing homosexuality to incest or bestiality. No matter what you argue in response, it could not be right, because this person would hide their bigotry behind the untouchable shield of personal belief. Now, I don't wish to attack only people with a religious belief, because obviously this isn't everyone, but that religious belief has now spread out from religion and has spread into the rest of the world of I believe my side, therefore I don't pay any attention to the other one. The idea here is to produce a steel-cased view that could not be challenged, and in some ways it does do that, with the person saying that... they imagine it is because that they are clever, it's a fact that they are ignorant. You cannot argue with either an idiot or a bigot. They do not hear and they do not think. You can be rude and take the piss out of these people as often as you want, because it is the only way that they can be dealt with a lot of the time. So the idea of us having to, I mean, this liberal idea of us having to have some kind of high ground on politeness and kind of how dare you, sir, our way into an argument. Yeah, Donald Trump, president. That's all I'll say about that. Getting all morally upset at a misogynist, for instance, is a complete waste of time. They've constructed a mind palace where women are inferior. Polite debate, armed with all the facts, as you might be, is utterly useless. Now, let me give you another quick example before we go on. This is from an article in New Internationalist magazine, which I normally get hold of, and it's about Donald Trump's... it's called A Rust Belt Romance. Enter the New Protectionism and Trump's Trade Wars. This is, as I said, a few things have lined up for this show this week, and this is one of them. I happened to read this in bed last night. Now, this is a quote worth putting in. So, for those of you who probably know this, right, this is about the US trade war that's going on between them and China and who's winning, if anyone can actually win in a stupid thing like this, and who's not. Here's a quick example. Quote, in September, the president tweeted, tariffs have put the US in a very strong bargaining position with billions of dollars and jobs. By the way, billions, dollars and jobs are all in have capital letters at the beginning, flowing into our country. And yet cost increases have thus far been almost unnoticeable, unquote. A few weeks later, it was reported that duty on steel and aluminium imports had cost US companies about $545 million in September alone. By November, General Motors announced it would be shredding almost 15,000 jobs and closing four plants in the US. Tariffs were costing the company $1 billion. A Republican senator named Tim Ryan, or a representative named Tim Ryan, had tweeted that he wanted President Trump to come and make good on his promise that he'd said to his constituents of, you know, the jobs are coming back, don't move, don't sell your homes, just stay here. Soy farmers have been hit hard by China's retaliatory tariffs, and they were promised $12 billion in state aid to offset their losses. But Illinois soy and corn farmer Lynn Rohashibi, I'm shit on names tonight, I do apologise, said that she would have to let staff go if the standoff with China continued. She was quoted as saying, we do not want handouts, we want to trade and we want to sell our crop. So that's a good example of what I'm talking about. Those are what was said by your big wet boy of a president who so many of those people love and follow everything he says. And then those are the actual facts. Now, armed with those facts, has anyone changed the mind of any Trump voters? Do you think this will make any effect on him getting a second term? Well, if the absolute shower of shit that's coming up on the side of the Democrats to stand against him so far is anything to go by, you can pen in Trump 2020 as a given. Now, another version of the wonderful self-made victim in this country, Jeremy Clarkson. Like all good middle-class, middle-aged white men, he believes himself to be the victim for being fired from the BBC after he punched a member of staff in a drunken rage because his dinner wasn't ready. He is has the impenetrable self-righteousness of an irrelevant little man who believes himself infallible, a bit like God. His fans are exactly the same, and none of them can be reasoned with. Therefore, they cannot be debated with. They're not worth debating, and they should be shut out because they're wasting everyone's time. And the victims of all of this kind of stuff, again, is not mouthy little pricks like me sitting in my very nice home. This doesn't affect me. It affects people who don't look like me. It affects people further down the scale of available resources to actually get on with their lives, people who don't make as much money as we do because we have a strong and effective trade union. Now, the big problem here is the results, as I've said. When being harangued by these little bitch boys outside Westminster, Owen Jones pointed out how many of the abuses I said earlier were coming directly from newspaper headlines. And the papers, in their true Britishness, take no responsibility for anything that they've done. They don't take responsibility for the outcome. They just whip up the hatred and intolerance, including violent attacks and or harassment of people in the streets, the workplace, or even the home. And then they stand back. On last week's BBC Question Time, we saw a pile-on instigated by... a pile-on instigated by Isabel Oakenshott and aided by presenter Fiona Bruce against the favourite far-right punchbag Diane Abbott MP, who is always upset the establishment by being an MP and a woman and black. During this particular episode, Oakenshott asked Abbott why she was calling for a general election when the Labour Party were 6 points behind in the polls. When Abbott corrected her, at least two polls released in the last fortnight showed Labour either ahead or neck and neck with the Conservatives. She was told by Oakenshott and Bruce that she was wrong, and why was she saying these things? The hogs in the audience also began to jeer like the circus animals that they are. It later emerged that the Labour Party have asked for the release of some footage that apparently takes place before the Question Time programme began of Bruce and others talking shit to Diane Abbott. I don't know what about, but if such footage exists, I would like to see it. Diane Abbott has, of course, exposed all this and has called on the BBC to stop treating Jeremy Corbyn and his close MPs and supporters like her as the fringe cranks that they seem to think they are, especially as they're getting closer and closer to power. So far, the BBC have admitted their fault but failed to apologise. A lack of responsibility, once again. A great part of being patriotic, I think, is not taking any responsibility for your bullshit. We on the left have made many mistakes, but none more so than allowing all of this to become normal. As soon as these people are engaged with, they have gained some kind of victory by effectively being mainstreamed. And police do not even insult my intelligence by saying that this really represents any kind of freedom worth a toss. It's certainly not worth the freedom I would fight for. You're weak and you're opening a box that you should really be left alone. It's all anti-immigrant bullshit scare stories. Now, Dave, I know you wanted, before I move on to the next thing, I know you wanted to talk about what happened on Quick. You've got a bit more detail on this than I have.
I've just researched things on so many days on this, and I can't put any clarity on that, but I must say some of the social media people who are very passionate about what their life is like, they do research this stuff. So what has happened is there were 10 polls. Labour was ahead on 7 of those. And they were only 3 points behind on 3 of those of the 10. The quote that she's miles behind. I have written to the BBC asking for a full transcript of the show before. Now, apparently new presenter Fiona Bruce came out to address the audience before, hailed for her performance from the week before by fans, and after happily approving of the sycophantic praise that she was adorned with from some quarters, Bruce proceeded to warm up the crowd. The person says, "I am aware that this was indeed a tradition with former host David Dimbleby, and the audience members were encouraged to participate as vocally and enthusiastically as possible. Nothing wrong with that in exercising democracy, it would seem." Now, in regards to Fiona Bruce, now this information's come out. She's married to advertising agency executive Nigel Sharrocks, who owns a media company and supplies the BBC, the media company, with... Apparently, it supplies the BBC with strictly government policy via his social media company. That contract to a £3.5 million. That's what people are stating on Twitter. I did check the company out. He resigned from another company some years ago. So, some people have taken, and quite rightly, I think, because I know Diane Abbott, I've work with her and Bernie Grant in the 80s during the Tottenham, and actually it with them was Jeremy Corbyn, actually, in the 80s, into the people living in poverty in Tottenham and the Tottenham riots and stuff. So I'll just throw that in there. I have seen a video of her being attacked on the train, and it was a passenger that stepped in to assist her. And I know she was on typed, it was a snap election, which is the worst kind. If you're the party in opposition, it's the worst kind to deal with a snap election. And at that time, she was going for treatment with diabetes 2, type 2. But she could only attend this Sky interview. She fluffed it all up due to those symptoms. And obviously, people are honing in on that. And if you've got some billionaire media supporting you know, and that's what happened, and she'll never live it down. But I can tell you this for nothing, to get into some very high seat of education in the 70s as an Afro-Caribbean, I think it was Cambridge, you can't be stupid to go from where she lived and where her family are from. I think her dad's a welder or something. And a black girl from the 70s to, I'm going to Cambridge because I love reading novels and stuff like that. And for her to actually do that, to that level of seat of education, you can't do that if you're stupid. I promise you, you can't. You don't have to just fight the academia of it. You've also at that time got to fight a huge amount of racism. I mean, God, you know... I'm telling you, in the 70s, as a minority, it weren't nice. But she did that. You cannot do that if you're stupid. Certainly in the way they portray her. John?
Yeah, that is a classic example. But I suppose, again, this kind of part of what I'm talking about tonight is that people's opinions overriding actual facts. And one of the things that I hate the most, well, two things. One is making stuff up. So this would be one about, you know, something happened on the train before there, or Diane said something to someone beforehand. And another is the justification the far right have attempted to do of those two Syrian refugees being abused in some shithole town in the north last year, and saying, well, it's because, you know, one of them slapped the sister of another one or something like that. It's bullshit. It's a complete lie. And it's stuff that's just been made up, a bit like the example I just gave you from Mr. Trump, of literally just saying something that isn't true, and the absolute hogs that support this guy constantly will go, yeah, that's absolutely right, because it's a thing they want to believe. You know, all of these bullshit scare stories and anti-immigration stuff, it's all the same. And in the case of Diane Abbott, the people just, do you know, there are people who, I guarantee you, next time some people start some shit about her, just ask them, do they know who she's even the MP for? What area she's the MP for? Do you know how long she's been in politics? Do you know anything about her beyond that? No, you don't. What you know about is a very intelligent, large black woman on TV telling you the way that it is, and you don't like it, white boy. That's what it's about. You just don't like this woman having views and opinions and being able to express them while you continue to exist in your pitiful existence, which mostly is your fault. You know, I'm not saying that. I mean, we will, you know, we've discussed this on the show before about the war on the working class in this country, and it's absolutely disgusting. But at the same time, we do need to take some responsibility for our own actions. And racism is not, there's no, I'm afraid racism isn't something you get away with on the basis of some other stuff that's happened to you. Okay. Same as misogyny isn't, you know. Listen, well, I've had some crap girlfriends too, mate. That's the way it goes. And I've been a thoroughly shitty boyfriend. You know, this idea of you know, I hate women because they, you know, they won't sleep with me. Well, you know, they're not compelled to, all right? It's just, well, anyway, that's for the week when we do a show on toxic masculinity and incels. I won't get into that now. What I am going to mention, however, is how that I keep promising or threatening, depending on your view, to do a show on the subject of Brexit. We don't have time to do it right now, but I'll just say a couple of things about it. This is actually the heart of much of the where the poisonous modern discourse is allowed to emerge, because while many will claim concerns for where British rules are made and some non-committed concept of democracy, the EU referendum in 2016 was only about xenophobia and racism. That was the only argument on the table, and the Leave campaign was based purely on resentment and fear. And again, none of it was really based on fact. Particularly in regards to Turkey. The people abusing those outside Westminster claimed they were doing it for Brexit as it is being betrayed. They weren't doing it for that. They were doing it because they are far-right thugs who, like the ideology of fascism, believe that physically imposing their view is the only way to get anything done. And to be honest, with a bunch of losers like that, they've probably got a point there, because they ain't going to get anything done otherwise. Ignorance and pride are two things that make it impossible to actually debate with people. They go together alarmingly well in the modern world, and as we are seeing with the Brexit bullshit, some people and groups uphold a great British tradition of refusing to admit that they are a plank who doesn't know what they're talking about. Again, this leads to endless circles of finding new ways to pretend that you were right all along, even though you've never actually done your homework. So with all that we've talked about, it's clear that some things are not debatable because of ignorance, moral reasons, or an unequal distribution of consequences. It's doing this, you know, debating is a trick, folks. It's a game. And the worst thing is it's a game to the middle class. It's those people who are involved in politics, those people who got involved in it at the universities they went to because their dad went there. You know, this is all just... when Hugo and Tarquin invite hardcore right-wing speakers to the Oxford Union speaker place, they're only doing it because they think they're clever, okay? They're not clever. They're inbred, chinless wankers, okay? They're doing it because they think it's a good laugh, but it isn't them that gets the shit beaten out of them on the way home from the train every evening, because it isn't them that looks like the wrong colour, or for that matter, even has to take a train, all right? So those people are utterly irrelevant. Okay, it's getting late, so I better do a conclusion. Basically, what we're seeing at the moment has been a long time coming. In the elements of the culture and the politics that we're seeing now, is a fight over the central soul of humanity and how is it expressed in British society, which does exist, folks. What we're actually losing in a literal sense is, if we're foolish enough to think there is sincerity in most of our opponents, well, that many of them are not actually professionals whose interests are establishment-based and will sink to the level of inspiring violence, then we really are stupid. To begin with, the right have lost this culture war. They know they have. That's why they're so angry. And in order to still even be in this game, they have had to change up their approach. And they can only do this because the rest of us are too politically or culturally ignorant or careless to realise what they are really doing. They are still just as racist and extreme, but they hide behind concepts that they've never fought for, like free speech or voting rights or any of those things. In fact, their aim is to totally reduce freedom for vast swathes of people, including the middle class and anyone who's an immigrant, anyone who's a refugee, anyone else like that. We need to address issues like betrayal as well within our own community. As I said before, I believe that working class people who are conservative in their outlook are disparaging of trade unions or other working class institutions. They're effectively betraying their class and their cultural interests. Now, they have every free right to do that if they want to, but that doesn't mean I have to like them or listen to them. You may feel that I cannot categorise this as simply, and I understand that. That's a good argument. But every part of the degradation of culture or the relevance that I hear people complain about, such as jobs and working conditions getting worse or football being overpriced or everything else, all comes back to class issues. Class issues that were most violently brought to the fore by Margaret Thatcher's government, who many working class people voted for, and the class war and the cultural revolution that broke the working class as a matter of policy, which is what they were there for. Another good example today is something else that was serendipitously popped into the world is, I've always made the point that the establishment and centrists and all that lot, Tony Blair had his photograph today taken with Jair Bolsonaro, the far right leader of Brazil, a man who would rather have a dead son than a gay son, the man who would like to bring back the military regime that dominated Brazil. I have absolutely no doubt that he will do that and wants to destroy the rainforest and the people who live there. It's frightening stuff. I'm getting worried to go out in the streets sometimes. I don't know that's actually going to stop me, by the way, and I'm more than able to put my money where my mouth is if any of you yellow vested twits want to show up around my way. But left wing bookshops are being attacked. We saw that at Bookmarks in London by some of the same people that attacked Owen and Anna outside of Westminster. Left-wing politicians are being threatened. One Labour MP is already dead. People are being shouted down and harassed because shouting down and harassing people is not free speech. We need to not only protect ourselves and take this fight directly to those people with zero mercy, because they are a direct threat to us and they will stop at nothing unless they are made to. And without a doubt, giving them a platform on a mainstream channel has led to all of this. This has been done before. We're not doing anything wrong here, okay? Check out the 43 group and others who took the fight to the fascists rather than just sat back and gave them a platform to speak freely on. They started the job. They did a damn good job of it, and I salute them for doing it. And now it's our turn to come along and finish it. There's no meeting in the middle here. There is no shared ground. I have no time for centrists generally, but specifically on issues like this, where they only wish to return to their version of normal, which is part of what got us into this situation in the first place. With all of this in mind, can we please stop being polite and face the inevitable? Get some self-defense classes and face these thugs off in the only way that they understand, and we know that they want to take things. We must basically defend ourselves against unrelenting brutality. And in the mental sense, we need to give exactly the same back. As Joe Strummer once said, take all the hatred is given to you, bundle it up and give it back five times harder. There's nobody innocent here, okay? Being polite is irrelevant to either right-wingers or centrists, and for that matter, any other little bitch. So I didn't come here to be nice to people. I came here to change the world for the better. For debate to mean anything like the rest of culture, it needs to be rescued from those who exercise the most power over it right now. They have no moral right and will lead us into a position where debate will become irrelevant and only violence will reign. Dave, over to you.
Thanks very much, John. Before John goes, we were going to talk about Brexit, and one of the fears was we'll get our sovereignty back. I've got exactly, because apparently I masquerade as a legal secretary, and I've read the legalities for Brexit. That is another show, and what I'm going to tell you is going to blow your mind about sovereignty, and this is when we're out of it, what the process is, and it all has to take place in Parliament. So I'm telling you now, you will not that we lose going to lose sovereignty. Absolutely not. That was never the case. And to come out of it, you will practice that sovereignty. And what I will tell listeners is going to blow your mind, John. Next week,
absolutely. Yep.
And I look forward to it, and look forward to interviews with leading members of the community that matter. Thank you, John.
Thanks, mate. Thanks again.
All the Rage with John Bowd. www.tracksfm.org.